Hello, everyone, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, extremists of every color, every stripe. Welcome. You're watching The Naturalist Capitalist. And I haven't had him on in a while, but back on the show, I think for the fourth time, we've got my friend Phil Labonte. How you doing, Phil?
Hi, how are you, sir?
I'm good. Did you miss me?
I did, a lot. A lot. The facial hair has gone through some evolutions, yours, not mine. I approve of each and every one.
Oh, good. All right. Yeah, you never know what you're going to get with me is when it comes to hair. So what's the last several months been like? I know you've been touring. How has that gone with COVID? Has that been ridiculous, or what's the deal with that?
It has not been ridiculous. Obviously flights, you've got your masks, which is, I mean, to be honest with you, from my perspective, it's slightly annoying because wearing it for, you know, the time that you're on the plane is annoying and in between, you know, in your layovers and stuff. But I mean, as soon as you go to a restaurant, you take it off. So, I mean, I think that from my perspective, and this is the opinion of a guy that yells at a stick for a living. So take that for what it's worth. But from what I can gather, masks are very much a just something to make people feel better. They're not extremely effective. When they are effective, it is at keeping someone that currently has COVID or is carrying COVID from spreading it around. It doesn't prevent you from getting COVID,
right?
Or from being exposed to COVID. So it's more about limiting the viral load in a given area than anything else. But hey, fine. People want to see people wearing masks. I'm okay with it. When I'm indoors or at, you know, on the air, you know, at the airport or on a plane, no problem. Fine. I'm easy. We played in Sturgis, and that was largely maskless. It was very, very much an outdoor thing. I don't know if you've been to Sturgis or not, but so you know what it's like. It's everything's outdoors. The show was outdoors. There was probably a couple thousand people, maybe 1,000 people or something like that when we played. And, the show was killer. It was an outdoor venue. So it was, you know, people were doing their thing and whatever. As of right now, no one in All That Remains has COVID, although Jason, our drummer, is feeling under the weather. So he's had COVID and he's been vaccinated. So I suspect that he does not have COVID now. But we'll see. He's getting tested, and I think he's getting tested today, and we'll get the results tomorrow or something. But I still suspect that he doesn't have it. So, you know, we've done 5 shows now, I think. We did 3. No, we've done 7 shows so far. And, you know, they were cool. You know, we played the Iowa State Fair with Five Finger, and that was killer. That was probably 15,000 people or 10,000 people, something like that. It was huge. And then we did a headlining show in Wisconsin. That was a small show for a few hundred people in kind of a middle of nowhere kind of place, Kansasville. Then we did the New York fair in New York, and you know, the shows have gone pretty well for the most part. You know, it's cool to be back playing shows again. You know, the last time we played before we got back on the road this summer was November of 2019. So we went from end of 2019 until halfway through 2021 without playing a show. And that's the longest I've gone without playing a show since the 90s.
Wow.
Which sounds weird, but it's true. Things are okay out there in the real world. I know if you're on the internet, specifically on Twitter, it's a very white hot culture war that you're exposed to. But if you go out into the real world, you know, people are dealing with it fairly well, I think.
Yeah, you brought up the mask thing, and I think that you might be of a similar mind to me on this. I don't like wearing a mask. It's not fun. I mean, it's annoying, but I felt like the masks were almost an intentional distraction, because it seems like whenever the establishment, or whatever you want to call it, whenever they find something that can split the working class on right or left, or, you know, white collar, blue collar, whatever, they always take advantage of that. And there was such a distinct right-left approach to masks. I mean, obviously it bled over a little bit both ways, but it was a culture war. And everyone was screaming at each other about wearing masks when billions of dollars are going, you know, to corporations and Wall Street. And it just seemed like the wrong problem to be focusing on. I just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
I think the focus on masks is definitely more of a culture war thing, because it is the obvious outward display of which team you're on.
Right.
You know, if you, so there's one of our guys, you know, one of the guys in the band is strongly anti-Trump, really doesn't like Republicans. And, you know, he likes to wear the mask. Like, he's like, I'm going to wear the mask. And, you know, obviously none of us have a problem with it. There's, you know, there's nobody in the band that is a, you know, that's against vaccines or against getting vaccines, not about mandates, because I am extremely vocally against mandates. But that's not because I'm against vaccines per se. I'm vaccinated. It's because I'm against adding state force to anything. So there's no one that's against, you know, getting vaccinated in the band. So if he wants to wear one, we're like, fine, whatever, you know. But for him, I think that it's very much a I'm not one of them, you know, kind of thing. And I think that you see that in, you know, specifically on the internet and on Twitter and stuff, which is where I spend a lot of time, probably too much, where people say things like, you know, I'm going to wear two masks. I'm going to wear, you know, I'm going to wear my mask even though I'm vaccinated, or I'm going to wear my mask anyways, especially a couple months ago before all the hubbub about the Delta variant is when you really saw it the most. Like when Texas was like, we're going to stop mandates, people were like, well, I'm going to wear my mask anyways, and I'm going to wear it, and I'm going to make sure that those filthy Republicans know that I'm wearing a mask, and how can you not mandate it, and da 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 da, all the you know, the response. And I mean, it's stupid. The response is, you know, again, I'm not super, I don't have a strong feeling about masks other than they're mostly for show. But yeah, it really is more about tribal signaling than anything else.
Yeah,
excuse me 1 second.
Hey, no problem.
Get in there. Get in there.
As soon as we go live, the dog decides to get up and start complaining.
No, it's all good.
So anyways, you were saying, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it seems like people's brains are broken, that they're going to live with this forever. You know, like I think some people really will wear masks until they die now. Like, it's just something that they're always going to do. And it just makes me think, like, you weren't worried about this during flu season or any other sickness that's come about. And I also wonder the evolutionary long-term effects of this, because I think that we've already screwed ourselves by sanitizing everything all the time before COVID. Like, it seems like we've killed immunity. It seems like we've brought defects into our society that we wouldn't have had otherwise. So with this hyper ultra sensitive attitude toward any germs at all, I feel like that's going to have a long-term negative effect.
Yeah, that's something that I'm cognizant of, and I think that you're probably right. The over sanitization of you know, people's homes and stuff. I do worry about that. I also worry about what that's going to do on the evolution, due to the evolution of bacteria and microbes and stuff, because we're already seeing certain, you know, pathogens. I'm not sure if that's the right term or not, but certain bugs are resistant to things like penicillin and amoxicillin. They're getting a resistance because people don't use their medications properly. They don't take them long enough or whatever. And also just because that's what evolution does. You know,
right.
When you find it, to think that it's not a constant arms race between pathogens and the host organisms of those pathogens is probably a bad position to take. Evolution is going to find a way. It's been finding a way. It found a way from single cell organisms up to dummies tweeting dumb things on Twitter. It's going to find a way around you washing your hands, right? Like, it's going to. So to think that we, you know, to think that we have a solution to evolution is probably a very arrogant perspective to take. And I do think you're right. I do think that there's the possibility of over sanitizing our lives and over cleaning and stuff. I mean, I like my place to be clean as much as the next guy. Well, maybe more, but even still, like, I get it. And I think that you're probably onto something. I think there's probably, there's something to be said for that theory.
Yeah. The other thing that I find kind of funny is how religious scientists, or not scientists so much, but people who follow science have turned it into a religion, which, you know, the reason I love science is because science doesn't actually ever prove anything. It really only ever disproves things. So, you know, gravity is still a theory. It's just that we've disproven so many other possibilities that's pretty much the only idea we have left right now. But if you could disprove the theory of gravity and say, no, that's not why things fall toward the center of, you know, a globe or whatever, like, it's this other thing. If you could find something else that explained why things fall to the ground and disprove gravity, you would change the world. And that's always been the whole idea of science to me. But the last year and a half, science has been a religion. And with religion, it's always, this is ultimate truth and you cannot stray from it. We have decided it for you. And that's what it has been this entire time. They've moved the goalpost, but each time they move the goalpost, it's absolute. And if you question it, you're a heretic and you need to be burned at the stake.
I don't even think that it's so much science that's the religion. I think that science is... Maybe science is more of a sacrament in the religion of the state.
Yeah.
You know, that's something, I mean, that's probably an incomplete thought, or an incomplete idea that I would have to refine, but I really don't think that it's so much science, because you see those signs that people put on their lawns where that we believe in this house, we believe this politically correct thing. And one of them is always, you know, science is real or whatever. And that is literally a statement of faith.
Right.
And I feel like we did touch on this when we had our conversation about religion, but I really do think that the religious impulse is part of humanity, part of human beings. And I don't think that we can just make it go away because we say that we don't believe you know, we're not Catholic or we're not Muslim or we're not Jewish or we're not, you know, we don't worship Baal or we're not Hindu or whatever. I think that impulse that is part of human beings. And I think the evidence for that is that there's religion in all humans, every society. No matter how separated and different their culture is, they almost I'm pretty sure they've all had some type of religion forever. And I think that it's probably more than just, oh, that's what they use to explain things that they can't explain. I think that it's probably something ingrained in us. And as we become a more secular society, the religion of the state becomes the predominant thing. And the gospel is what the state tells you. And the things that the state tells you to do are the sacraments. And I think that you see that as people become less interested in the older religions, they tend to become more interested in the new religion, which is, you know, it seems to me that it's the state. And that people react the same way when you say, you know, maybe we don't need the government. That's a blasphemous statement to someone that believes that the government is, you know, the is their religion, whether they believe it or not. And they'll tell you that they don't believe in religion, that they believe in science, that religion is for other people, all while they're going through the religious motions of worshiping the state. So, I mean, that's my take on it. I feel very much that the people that are, tend to be the strongest religion nowadays, are the people that are the most religious nowadays tend to be the people that worship the state. And another thing that I notice is the way that they hold other religions in contempt, specifically the one that they just replaced, which is here in the US, is Christianity. You know, again, most of your viewers that saw our old stuff know that I'm an atheist, and I don't really, you know, I don't have a particular affinity for any kind of Christianity or anything. Although there are things about religion that I think are good. Much as people like to quickly criticize religion, I think that's an in vogue thing that the people of the new religion tend to do. They tend to criticize Christianity and stuff because their religion is the religion that replaced Christianity. So the most recent and the thing that kept their religion at bay for so long, they hold the most contempt for. And you see it the way that they talk about Jesus land and insult Christians and the way that the cosmopolitan think that it's perfectly acceptable to insult any type of Christianity, but other religions, specifically religions from, you know, Asia or Islam and Hinduism and you know, Buddhism and stuff, those they don't want to insult. But the one that's close to home, that they have the most familiarity with, that their religion has recently just conquered, that one is fair game to tear apart. And I think that's because it is the conquered religion, you know, the religion that their religion has just recently kicked out of power.
Yeah, and statism is the worst religion, in my opinion, because at least with Christianity or Judaism or Islam or Buddhism, there are some good aspects of those religions. Mm-hmm. You know, there's things about loyalty and forgiveness. And I mean, what's good about statism? It's only force. That's the only thing you have. I mean, because positive things about patriotism or whatever, those are not enforced through statism. Those are positive attributes you bring yourself. Statism is really community. Just the idea of authority and imposing will on other people. So
yeah, I
mean, it's been an evolution, but we haven't gone upward. We've ended up at the bottom with the most sophisticated minds, supposedly. Like, this is where we are now. It's kind of disappointing.
I mean, disappointing is probably a significant understatement. You know, like I was very interested in Jordan Peterson's ideas and stuff when I first found out about who he was, when he first kind of bust on the scene in like 2017 or 16 or whatever. And he was the first person that kind of led me to start looking at philosophers like Nietzsche and stuff. And his explanation of a lot of Nietzsche's stuff and the way he understood it, I found very interesting, especially the stuff that Nietzsche said about God, especially, you know, the idea that God is dead. And I'd heard that before many, many times. And the people that have the new secular religion always say it as if it's some kind of triumph. And then
where he thought it was sad, like he talked about how it was tragic that was
yeah.
Exactly.
And it, that's so interesting to me, Ari. That was so interesting, right? And it is so interesting to me to have it explained like that, and also to start digging in myself and stuff. You know, because of the repercussions, the idea that, you know, God is dead and now man has to find a way to replace God. And it looks like we've replaced it with the state, and that has led to the industrialization of murder and killing. And the 20th century is the most atrocious when it comes to murder of innocent people by government in all of human history. And it's because of the industrialization of murder. And Nietzsche was completely right to say that this is probably pretty horrible. And I'm not so sure that we're done with that yet. And by we're, I mean, I'm not so sure human beings have learned their lesson that they cannot remake man. They cannot create the overman or the supreme Soviet or whatever, that you have to allow humanity to be human, and any attempts to fix human beings or to make or perfect human beings will always be met with monstrous failure and stacks and stacks and stacks of dead bodies.
Yeah, speaking of reorganized society and worship of the state, are you thinking of moving to Australia anytime soon? Or
dude, they call it the well camp. Did you see that?
I did, yeah. That was...
I couldn't... if you looked into like Orwell's brain and said, hey, can you come up with, what would you call these camps? I don't think you could come up with a more Orwellian name than Well Camp. I mean, like, it fits right there with Ministry of Truth, you know, Mini True, you know, the Ministry of Justice, the Ministry of, you know, it's frightening. And I feel like I made a thread about this. There are people in the U.S. that are dying to be able to start rounding people up. They are just chomping at the bit. And they might be a minority, but I'm not so confident. Someone from Cato put up a tweet about a tweet the Libertarian Party of New Hampshire had done. And he was like, I can't understand why people aren't flocking to the Libertarian Party, as if spicy tweets are the reason that people don't embrace liberty.
I know,
it's right? Like, the obvious reason that people don't embrace liberty is because most people are authoritarian monsters.
Right.
They want liberty for themselves, but they want a guy with a gun to kick in their neighbor's door and make them live the way that, you know, they should live, you know?
Yeah, I was talking to my dad about this today on the phone, that it's so ironic because 5 years ago I was railing against the Republicans for the way they were talking about immigration and the way they were talking about censoring the internet. So there was this, there's this great clip of Trump where he's talking to, and some of you guys watching might remember this, but he's arguing with Rand Paul about closing down parts of the internet. He says, like, you know, he's like, I'm all for free speech, but I think that there are certain parts that we should shut down because there might be extremist groups and, you know, we want to know what they're talking about. I mean, you just pull that out of 2015 and put it into 2021 and just flip the sides. And none of the vocabulary is different. It's shutting down certain parts of the internet where extremists might rise up and we need to keep an eye on them. And I was railing against it in 2015, and I'm railing against it now. And then the idea of, like, I mean, Ted Cruz and Donald Trump were talking about rounding up all 11 million illegal immigrants or however many are here. And I was against that idea. I was like, no, crazy. I don't care who they are or why they're here. You know, like, the idea of having fucking trucks go around rounding people up and kicking them out. And now, you know, we're approaching the point where people are talking about that on the other side. And I'm just like, Jesus fucking Christ, guys. Like, if you are okay with doing this to somebody else, it'll eventually bite you in the ass. It's that whole,
it will be you.
It's that quote from that pastor in Germany, you know, like, they came for the Jews and I didn't do anything. Yeah. Then they came for the gypsies and did, you know, all this list. And then they came for me and no one was left to, you know, protect me. And
yeah,
that's what we're living in right now. It's just insane.
It is. And it's entirely frustrating. I mean, this year we're celebrating a 15 year anniversary of one of our records called The Fall of Ideals. It came out in 2006. And, the title, The Fall of Ideals, was because 15 years ago, I was starting to notice that things that I grew up thinking really mattered, people didn't really seem to feel like it was important anymore. And I was like, guys, these things are, I always was like, these things are important. Like, they matter. Like, it matters how we treat the Constitution. Like, and I know that there's, you know, there's an argument against the Constitution, or there's plenty of arguments against the Constitution. I've heard them, I'm familiar with them, and they are compelling. You know, I think that the reason that I find them more compelling now than I would have, say, 15 years ago is because there have been so many people that have been educated in a way, at public schools to think that the Constitution doesn't matter, or it's not actually a limit on government, or it shouldn't be a limit on government, or whatever. You know, I understand that the Constitution is only a set of ideas and it's only as good as your society. And that's what I was saying. You know, that's what I was thinking when I said the fall of ideals, because as much as we want to believe, you know, especially conservatives want to believe that the Constitution is what limits the government, it's not. It's the people that limit the government. And as long as there are people that, as long as there are enough people that want to limit the government will stay limited. But as soon as people don't care and they don't want to limit the government, the Constitution is just a piece of paper. And there is part of me that is given hope by people like Michael Malice and the things that he's saying that are reaching people on the right, like the whole, you know, cops, ACAB stuff. Like, Michael Malice has a significantly worse view of police than I do, but I am not a thin blue line guy by any stretch of the imagination. Right. I think that I heard Joe Rogan say, if you have, you know, 13 bad or 13 good cops and one bad cop, but the 13 don't turn in the one, you actually have 14 bad cops. And that's the truth. The whole thin blue line thing, that's a load of shit. And that's how you end up with entirely bad police. Like, if the police aren't policing the police, then they're all bad cops. If the police aren't saying, look, you're breaking the law by violating that guy's rights, then you're a bad cop too. If you turn your head, if you think, oh, I'm not going to turn in my buddy, I'm not going to, you know, narc out my cop friends, well, then you're all bad cops. So all of you people that won't, all of you police that won't turn in your buddies because you're all cops and you don't cross the thin blue line, Michael Malice is right about you. You're all garbage, you know?
Yeah.
And that's because you're breaking the law that you're supposed to be upholding, and you're doing it for good old boys club. And if that's the case, and you're only there to pick up a paycheck and do what you're told, and you're not going to stand up and say, wait a minute, we're not going to violate the people's rights, because the people are what give us our power. The people allowing us to have the legitimacy of the monopoly on violence. If the people don't want us to have that, then we have illegitimate power. If you're not gonna admit that, then you're just an illegitimate guy with a gun, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I put a tweet out today that said, what's happening in Australia can 100% happen here, even with a constitution and half a billion guns. Constitutional rights and guns don't stop tyranny. People stop tyranny, and we're not doing shit. So, you know, that whole Rothbardian idea that we are not the government, I do agree with that. Like, when the U.S. government bombed Syria, that's not me bombing Syria. I don't agree with that, and I do everything I can not to do it. But it's not quite that cut and dry either. Like, there is some power that we have against the government that we don't use. Like, people, I mean, we outnumber the government by such a large percentage, and we just don't do anything about it. We just let them do whatever they want. So maybe we're not the government, but we are, in a way, responsible for the government that exists now, and it's our responsibility to counter it. So, yeah, I mean, you can wash your hands of what it's doing because you don't approve of it. But at the same time, like, it's kind of on you to try to do something about it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that the fact that people on the right are starting to say, well, you know, maybe if the people on the right, and not just the far right or the libertarian right, but what you would consider your regular conservative right, are starting to say, look, if people like Jack Posobiec are being put on lists, if people like Donald Trump are going to be called all the bad names because he's Donald Trump and because he threatens the establishment, if people like, you know, people that were in the Trump administration, people like Rudy Giuliani, right? Like, Giuliani is not an anarchist. He's not a libertarian, but he is being treated by the mainstream as if he is a far right extremist. And so your average, you know, conservative that remembers America's mayor right after 9/11 and the job that he did by being a steady hand in New York, and people that have a very favorable view of Rudy Giuliani because of what they saw, you know, his behavior and his leadership in New York after 9/11, they're going to look at the cops that would kick in his door. They're going to look at the feds and they're going to say, you know, maybe the cops aren't all the good guys. Maybe the cops are just going to do what the government tells them. And then they're going to look back at history and they're going to, you know, they're going to see the World War II bad guys that say things like, oh, I was just doing what I was told. I was just following orders. You know, those guys didn't get away with it. We're just following orders. And, you know, I'm not trying to make connections to, you know, calling people. I'm not saying that what's going on now is Nazis. But what I'm saying is that it's not okay to say I was just following orders, specifically for the military and for people in positions of power, because they swear an oath to the Constitution. And it's very clear when you're violating people's rights. Constitution is, again, I bring up the Constitution a lot because it is the tool that we have to make an argument more than anything else. It doesn't actually prevent things, but I do think that the Constitution is useful in making compelling arguments. And I think that's something that I've been thinking about lately, about the usefulness of the Constitution. I made a tweet about it the other day because I teeter back and forth between, is the Constitution worth anything? Is Lysander Spooner right? Or, you know, or were the framers right about the Constitution? And,
right.
And I go back and forth because, again, it is just a piece of paper. And I think that that it might be that the most value in the Constitution is making arguments and using the Constitution as a persuasion tool than actually expecting it to do anything. If you can point to someone and be like, look, that's not right. That's unconstitutional. This is why. Your average normie who still thinks the Constitution has some kind of magic power will be like, you can convince them by using arguments and referring to the Constitution. I mean, your average anarchist, you're not going to convince them. They're going to be like, whatever, man. They're going to tell you, you know, go read No Treason and shut up, normie, or whatever. But like, if you can use the Constitution to convince people that the government is clearly outside of what is, you know, its legal role, then I think that it is, at the very least, it's still useful. You know?
Yeah, sort of the Ron Paul approach with the Constitution. I mean, that's what he did. He kind of brought it to normies to explain how massive the government has become. You know, on my my Twitter name is Reed Coverdale Extremist now, and that's sort of a joke because that harkens back to Brennan at the beginning of this year when he was kind of grouping everybody who wasn't a cucked liberal as
being part of the reason why I'm literally in Texas right now. You know,
But it is kind of hilarious. You know, I want to make a video about this. You know, I'm an extremist because I think it's wrong that we're bombing seven countries. I think it's wrong that we incarcerate people for what they want to put in their body. I think it's wrong.
Or for what they don't want to put in their body nowadays.
Want to put in their body. Yeah, that could be coming. I think it's wrong that the government is spying on us and, you know, tapping our phones and looking at our search history. That I think it's wrong that, you know, just you could name the abuse down the line that I don't agree with. But that makes me an extremist. Where if you reframe these arguments to normies and you say, imagine if the government like wanted to lock you up for smoking a cigarette or having a beer, like you wouldn't have that, would you? And they'd be like, no, of course not. And you'd say, well, are you the extremist for thinking that way? You know, it's so I don't know. I'm sort of embracing the label while simultaneously trying to show how ridiculous it is. You know, and some people can't handle it. Like I made a lot of McCain posts yesterday because it was his death anniversary, but they were hard in the paint, I realized. But I think for some people, they, you know, if they actually think about what I'm saying, they'd be like, okay, you know, he's got a point. And I don't really know where that line is. I don't know when being too extreme just pushes too many people away, because they're, especially on Twitter, there's that weird line where you've got to be bold and shocking enough to get people's attention, but then at the same time you can be like so vulgar and so crass and so obnoxious that people won't want to listen to you anymore. And I've definitely evolved in the last several months. Like I've gotten more aggressive. But what do you think? Like what's the best way to what's the most successful way you've reached those people? Because I've kind of given up on the like really measured, like, oh, here, let's sit down. You know, the Larry Sharp approach. He's very good at that. I don't mean to discredit him at all. That's his lane. But I don't know. Like, I just wasn't getting any traction with that. And I've tried the a little bit more shocking route. And it seems to be more successful, seems to get more people engaged. And then they come over here and then they'll watch an hour long conversation and they'll be like, oh, okay, I can kind of see where this guy's coming from. But what do you think?
Well, for me, it's a little different because anything that I say that is too extreme or is too shitposty or whatever, the metal blogs will pick up and trash me.
Right.
And then, so I have, you can go and search, there's a couple blogs out there that absolutely detest me. They have never liked me, like back in, again, you know, 15 years ago, they were criticizing me, but this is before, you know, social media became what it is today, and their politics and my politics have kind of gone like that. So they've spent the past decade really just every chance they get, they, you know, go after me. And so for me, I think it's most effective to try to tweet a flat criticism that shows how absurd whatever it is that I'm referencing is. Steve Van Zandt, the guy that's in, I think it's Stevie Van Zandt or something like that. The guy's in in Bruce Springsteen's band, and he's on Sirius XM. And he said something the other day that was totally hyperbolic. And my reply was just, and it was like, he associated COVID with a nuclear war. So I was just like, COVID is not a nuclear war.
Oh, yeah. I think I saw that. Yeah.
And then people started jumping in and trying to actually me into why COVID is like a nuclear war. And so I just kept retweeting the most hyperbolic, absurd, idiotic take saying COVID is not like a nuclear war, because I stand by that statement. COVID-19 is not like a nuclear war.
That sounds like an extremist position to me, Phil.
I know, right? So for me, I think that it's most useful to take ridiculous positions and or take the ridiculous things that people say, and to, in a very flat, uninsulting way, just, you know, contradict them and do it not hyperbolically, not with no insults, just, you know, kind of like, just imagine like some guy going, no, this is not, you know, no, COVID is not like nuclear war, you know, and people can kind of be like, oh yeah, that's really stupid. You know, a nuclear war would be, you know, hundreds of millions of people would die, and it might possibly, you know, ruin the entire planet. And COVID has killed, you know, 4 million people on a planet of 7 billion. That's 7,000 million.
I kind of use your tactic when I'm driving, because I'm not allowed to flip people off. And if I get angry, you know, I can be. So if someone does something really stupid, I make zero eye contact and I just stick my thumb out the window.
Yeah.
Because it's, if you don't make the eye contact and you just give them the thumbs down, they don't have the same recourse that they would if you flipped them off or screamed at them. Because then once you do that, you almost validate whatever response they're going to give you. And so the thumbs down out the window is just like the flat.
I like that. I like it.
Yeah.
Straight and, face. Boo. Yeah.
Oh man. And believe me, there are some fucking retards out there.
I'm sure
to go beyond the thumbs down. But, I think it's great that, you know, we all have our own approaches for messaging. You know, like I think Larry Sharp will definitely reach certain people. Dave Smith will reach certain people. You'll reach certain people.
He's all
reach certain people. And I hate the people who all want, you know, a monolith of messaging, because, you know, everyone's going to be attracted by something different. And yeah, maybe someone will run into the messaging that doesn't attract them and it'll give them a sour taste. But, you know, I mean, that's just the chance you got to take. You want to have as many people with as many different styles out there as you can, because things are fucked up. Like people are, if there is ever going to be an opportunity to get people's attention and say, hey, you know, we don't think what's going on right now is great, it's right now, because a lot of people are like, what the fuck? You know, like,
because they're literally making camps in Australia. And that's a great example. You can just say, well, they're literally doing it in Australia. And people will say, well, you know, that'll never happen here and derp a derp. But, like, I mean,
it has happened here with the Japanese in the 1940s. Like,
yeah, except that time that it did.
Yeah.
That'll never happen here, except for when it did. You think they wouldn't do it again? Again, right. Like Jesse Kelly, who's a really, really conservative, like very normal conservative guy, but he gets along with Michael Malice really, really well, so he can't be that bad. Michael Malice is, in my opinion, one of the most we must protect Michael Malice. He is an absolute treasure. But Jesse Kelly, he's very much like, you know, he the way he talks about communists and stuff, and he's like, look, they hate you. They want to put you in a camp. There are people in America, and I think he's right. There are people in America that want nothing more than to see people that are Trump supporters. And really what they mean is anyone that doesn't agree with them, because they say it's the Trump supporters. But the first thing that they do is anyone that disagrees with them, they insult and say that they're a Trump supporter. So they might say, oh, we should put all those Trump supporters in a camp. And then you'll say, well, what about the libertarians? Well, they'll say, no, there are no libertarians. They're just Trump supporters. Because what they actually mean is anyone that doesn't agree with me needs to go to a camp. And I think that the numbers are significantly higher than most people are comfortable with admitting. And I think the evidence of that is, you know, history. You know, the behavior during the Cultural Revolution in China, the behavior of the people that were the Red Guard and stuff. The behavior of people in authoritarian countries where they're very comfortable, or it's shown that people are very comfortable calling the police on their neighbor for things like, oh, I don't like the way he's cutting his bushes, or I don't like the way he's doing this or that. And so they just call the police and say, oh, I heard them saying subversive things. Come get them. You don't need to invoke, you know, World War II Germany to demonstrate that there are always people very happy to lie and use the state to make their neighbors disappear.
Yeah. Yeah. The fact that, you were talking about Rudy Giuliani earlier, the fact that they could put me and Rudy Giuliani in the category is ridiculous. And the fact that they're calling him far right. I mean, I hate Rudy Giuliani, but not because he's far right. That's like the most ridiculous description of Rudy Giuliani I've ever heard. And they did that about Trump too. Like Trump and Mitch McConnell are far right, apparently. I'm like, what? Yeah. What
are and that's because people like Bill Kristol are normal right. Bill Kristol and Jen Rubin, they're the conservatives. What they are is they're establishment pets. And they're the most disgusting people.
And it happens on both sides. Like Nancy Pelosi is apparently far left, where if you take Mitch McConnell and Nancy Pelosi and you compare their voting records, most of it's going to be exactly the same. They're going to have a couple things that they pander to their base on, but mostly everything they've completely supported in unison. And I think that's by design, that they're creating this false dichotomy between, you know, who is on each side. Because I've had a couple far left people on this show that agree with me on most things. Like they're not. One of them wasn't even politically active, and I was talking to her for about an hour, and what she was describing as her way of subverting the political system was basically agorism. And I was like, you and me, like, we could get along great. Like, we don't have anything at odds. You know, I mean, you might have some different views personally or economically, but you and I could get along together way better than Mitch McConnell and I could, or Nancy Pelosi and I could. But they're trying to drive this wedge and make us, you know, make us think that everybody on the left wants us in camps. And then they're trying to make everyone in the left want us in camps, you know, and it's just crazy. I mean, it's effective too, because, you know, so many people work inside now, or work from home, or work in a cubicle. Sure. It's not like it was 100 years ago when you had people working shoulder to shoulder all the time that actually know their coworkers, know what their life story was. Like, I've grown up that way. I mean, since I was 16, I was working as full time as I could. And it was in a lumber yard first, and then it was at a line work company, and now it's truck driving. So I'm alone now, but my other jobs, like, I was shoulder to shoulder with other guys who had families who were Christian, Republican, whatever, you know, and you humanize them because you know them and you realize, oh, they're just like me. And the same thing when I was working, doing roofing in Colorado for a while with Mexicans, you know, you realize, oh, these guys are just people just like me. And so many people are isolated now, that when all they hear about these people, whatever group it is on the news, and, you know, that they're the scum of the earth and that they're the reason everything sucks, it's so easy for them to otherize them and turn them into monsters. And then any political action against them is justified in their minds because they're like, they're not people, you know?
Yeah. It makes sense. And I might make some of the more strongly right-leaning people watching kind of cringe a little bit here, but it makes sense that Marx said the workers will band together. I think obviously Marx was wrong. Capitalism has proven that socialism is not actually going to happen the way that Marx predicted. But when you're a working person and you work with, you know, Hispanic dudes, you work with black dudes, you work with, if you're a white guy, I mean, you know, the people that you work with, they're people.
Yeah.
And you get to know them like people, and you'll poke fun at each other like normal people, because they're just people. And the significant differences are definitely class-based, not race-based. You know, people that are you know, Barack Obama and myself don't have very much in common. But you and I, or a truck driver that's a black guy, and myself have a whole lot in common. We both travel all the time. Like, I'm not doing the driving, but I'm going from place to place to place. And, you know, I'm not an upper crust wealthy guy. You know, we're a working band. We play shows to make money. And, you know, like, that's just the way that, you know, we're more of a blue collar band. So I have way more in common with people that work for a living than I do with, you know, say Barack Obama or George W. Bush or whatever, you know what I mean? And I think that's something that people don't realize, especially when they are in the, you know, the more elite classes or whatever, if you want to call them elite, or the bourgeoisie, you know, the bougie people, they don't realize that, you know, race isn't the big deal that they make it out to be. Class is the big deal. And when you've got poor people or working class people that spend time together, the skin color doesn't matter. It really, really doesn't. You know, there are times where, you know, black people are going to get a crappy deal dealing with the cops. I think that's probably true. You know, but I think that, you know, it's not a situation where, your average white guy that works with your average black guy, you know, they're destined to not get along. They've got far more in common than they do, different. They're just people.
Right. Yeah, totally. I got a few super chats here. I'll just read them. Just wondering if Phil can expand on his thoughts about condemning the Proud Boys or clarifying these nuts. Never change, Phil. Thanks for all the great music, great shooting and laughs. I don't even know what that's referencing. But.
So some guy, I made a tweet about the way that what's going on in Portland. And what has been going on in Portland over the weekend, Antifa beat the crap out of a bunch of journalists. And they were, you know, saying that the journalists were putting the Antifa people in danger and blah, 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 blah. And I said something along the lines of, you know, you can crap people crap on the Proud Boys, but they largely give Antifa and the broad left a pass. And they don't call them out for their violence. And then I said, if you are against violence, you are against violence for everybody. And if you are not going to say you're against violence for everyone, just come out and admit that you're okay with violence, that you're ascribing to the logic of Herbert Marcuse's, what is it? Repressive tolerance. And then someone said, well, are you going to condemn the Proud Boys? And I told him to eat shit, because I'm not going to let someone push me around and tell me what I have to say. So I said what I said. That's all that I have to say. And that guy can eat my dick.
That's the correct response. Yeah. You know,
you can't, don't try and force people to say stuff. I mean, it was clear in tweet that I wasn't endorsing violence at all. I was specifically speaking out against violence. So being like, well, you have to specify this. Donald Trump, you might be able to bully Donald Trump into saying that shit. You're not bullying me into it. So shut your fucking mouth.
Yeah, dude, it was amazing. A couple weeks ago, this clip came out of Ryan Dawson, and I didn't really like the clip, but I wasn't gonna trash my friend in front of people demanding that I denounce him. And then this clip came out of Olivia Rondo talking about Rothbard, and everyone was demanding that I denounce her, and I was like, fuck you guys. And it was kind of people from opposite ends of the spectrum, like the more woke people were upset about Ryan, and the more shit posting people were upset about Olivia. And I was like, I don't need to defend anything they're saying, but like, if you're gonna come after my friends and demand that I denounce them, you can go fuck yourself. You know, like, I'll talk to them myself, and I'll disassociate with someone when I want to. Like, yeah. I will call someone out when I want to, when I feel it's necessary. Like, I mean, if you want me to tell you to go fuck yourself, then try to force me to deny somebody.
There is no more important liberty than cognitive liberty. That is the liberty to think and say what you want. And if you think, if anyone thinks that they're going to bully me into saying something because they think that I should or they want me to, they've got another think coming. You can eat my ass. I will get you a spoon.
I love it. Let's see. What are three essential albums that Phil cannot live without?
Fumbling Towards Ecstasy by Sarah McLachlan. Master of Puppets by Metallica, and Necroticism, Discanting the Insalubrious by Carcass.
There you go. Does Phil know Aaron Lewis?
I do know Aaron. Aaron is a homeboy. He is from Western Massachusetts. I used to play shows with Stained when I was in Shadows Fall. We would play shows together at the clubs and stuff. Aaron is a very good dude. He's very Republican, so there are things that I would disagree with him about. He would call me a liberal, but he would say that I am one of the good liberals.
There you go. Well, it's always great talking with you, Phil. It's been a while since I had you on last time. We'll have to make them more common. I really like the way you think. I think the most important thing that you talk about a lot is looking at people as individuals instead of collectives, because that's how you get to where Australia is building fucking prison camps. You've otherized people. You've dehumanized them. You can't even, you know, these people have trouble differentiating people from the virus at this point. Like, we're, instead of just trying to isolate the virus, which was what they were originally saying, now you're trying to isolate people. And the funny thing is it's a lot of these minorities that, you know, liberals are usually gung-ho about protecting and defending. There are a lot of the people who aren't getting the vaccine. You know, a lot of black people and a lot of Hispanic people are not getting it. And you know, there's a lot of factors playing into that, but one of them is things like this Tuskegee Project, you know, like that probably plays a role. Like, they have a healthy distrust of the government. Any final thoughts or any plugs or anything coming up you want to talk about, or?
I guess I wanted to, really put a stamp on that, on the idea that people are individuals. The dehumanization of people is the fastest way to see your society fall apart. So if you do have a desire to see the United States not balkanize and not fall into civil war, the best course of action is to not look at people as groups, is to remember everyone's humanity and remember that people are people first. They are members of groups second. And if more people do that, then, you know, I think that we can see the U.S. getting through what seems to be a cultural revolution without too much damage. If people continue to go into their tribal groups and stuff, I think that the U.S. is on course for a few bad years, and I'm not sure when that'll happen. I'm not putting a time frame on it, but I have yet to see things that lead me to believe that we have had a significant change in course. People thought that it was going to be Joe Biden, but the powers that be started talking about Trumpism once Trump was no longer the president, because this is not going away with any person. Trump was a symptom. He was not a cause. It's not going to go away. If a Republican takes office, it's not going away. It's something that has to go away with the people of the United States, politicians are only going to react to it and capitalize on it. So it has to, it starts with you.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. Guys, go follow Phil on Twitter. I've got his link to his profile in the description. And then you you stream on Twitch, what, every Tuesday or something?
I stream on Twitch. Normally, it's Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday. The schedule has been kind of messy because of shows and travel and stuff like that. But I should be back to my normal schedule next week. Maybe I might stream tomorrow, but definitely Monday and Tuesday I will be streaming again. I'm Phil. It's just twitch.tv/PhilThatRemains. I have a TikTok now, and that is Phil That Remains Official. I had TikTok for a little while, and then I showed guns on a live stream, and then they booted me. So it's not regular Phil That Remains. It's Phil That Remains Official. The other one is okay. Defunct. So.
All right, guys. Well, go give him a follow everywhere that you have available, and I will be streaming with Peter Schiff on Saturday at 11 in the morning Eastern Standard Time. I've only got him for half an hour, so I'm not going to be able to ask him that much, but hopefully we'll get him back again soon. But please subscribe to the channel, and yeah, everyone keep looking at each other as individuals. Thanks, Phil.